and it is today's topical currents. Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman with you on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon.
Where the girls are as well.
And this hour we visit with journalist and author, foreign correspondent T.D. Allman. In 1987, while the Miami area was routinely dissed nationally, he wrote Miami, City of the Future. 27 years later, he's updated it. He last appeared here about his book, Finding Florida, The True History of the Sunshine State, and we welcome him back today. Welcome back to Miami, T.D. Allman.
It's an honor to be here, and you know, so much of my work, especially in my latest book, Finding Florida, but also everything I do throughout my career, has been sort of saying, no, that's wrong, and why did these people get things wrong? And of course, that's how I earn my living. Fortunately, enough mistakes are made by the press, the academics, and so on. I can come along and—
I've made a few.
I don't think so. I don't think so, Joe. Joe knows more about Miami. If I knew what Joe knew, I never would have finished either my Miami book or my Florida book, or they would be 6,000 pages long.
Right.
But I thought today, before I take out the stiletto, we might just pause a moment and appreciate the marvel that is Miami, this city, its resiliency. Although I was born in Florida, I had nothing to do with Florida until Esquire magazine sent me down here in 1980, and they said, take a look around. And of course, we'd had the Paradise Lost, will the last American take the flag? And I looked around and I said, Miami is to the end of the 20th century what Chicago was to the beginning of the 20th century. Chicago had Al Capone and it had Frank Lloyd Wright. Miami had the drug trade and it had Arquitectonica, Miami Sound Machine, all these wonderfully vital, interesting people. And what's amazing is it survived Hurricane, the big hurricane was Andrew, right? And it survived Hurricane Ilion. And
Ilion Gonzalez, you're referring to.
That's right, and it came back. So I want to today say congratulations to everybody who makes Miami, Miami. The other thing, many years went by, they say, why don't you have a place? I live in France and I live in New York. And they said, why don't you have a place in Miami? And I said, I don't want to be having lunch at Joe's one day, Joe Stonecrab. I said, oh yeah, didn't he write the Miami book a few, But I now do have a place and I love it. And the great thing about Miami is Gertrude Stein said of her hometown, Oakland, California, when you get there's no there there. I tell you, when you get to Miami, there's always a there there. The there is there even when you reach the baggage carousel.
That's true, as soon as you get off that plane. Mm-hmm. Well, as you've talked about, as Joe mentioned, this was written in 87. So the only thing that's different about this Miami City of the Future is the foreword and the afterword. Is that correct?
Well, yes, but there's a reason for that. Is it because I wanted to keep it as a relic, not as a relic, but as a living continuation of this very interesting time when we can now see that when the rest of the country was writing off Florida and Miami was actually already starting to reinvent itself. And there were so many people who said that it was a beautiful edition with a yellow cover. And everybody said the book meant so much to them. And the editors read it and other people read it and they said, don't change a word, it's Miami. But I did do a foreword and an afterword. I wrote them actually in Bangkok. Most of Miami was written in New York. And then the foreword and the afterword were written in Bangkok. And the foreword is called From Pariah to Paradigm. And you remember how it was. Everybody was afraid to go to Miami. And I end with everybody saying, you've got to be in South Beach. Now, I've been going around Florida, but I must mention my other book. It was a finalist for the National Book Award since we were on the show. It's gotten full-page reviews in the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal. And you played this marvelous intro music by Grant Peebles the last time I was on. Mm-hmm. And
courtesy of Michael Stock, our resident folk expert.
Well, he deserves a lot of credit. And I just met Grant at the McLean Music Festival in Brooksville, Florida, which I didn't know existed until the GPS guided me down this road. And so much good has come of this.
Tell us, what Miami's future in 2014 looks like compared with Miami's future in 1987.
Well, you know, this is the fascinating thing, because the people here were, they had been dumped on by the press. And, you know, why does the press always have to get stuff wrong? I mean, why? This goes back to the beginning and last, you know, the herd instinct. And as I said, I came down here and I looked around and said, what could be more American than sex, drugs, rock and roll, funny people coming in, speaking strange languages, becoming Americanized? And so I entitled the book Miami City of the Future. Now, everybody in Miami was thrilled, because we tend to equate the future with good stuff in America. But I meant the whole shebang, one way or the other. And so I think now Miami is really going to be on the way to becoming the city of the future, because, I, you know, as I said the other day in Orlando or someplace, I said, you know, you can deny climate change all you want, but that's not going to keep the water from seeping up from underneath you. And I said, you know, who cares about stand your ground when the earth is dissolving underneath you? But so here is Miami, and I there are several cities I know very well: Miami, Bangkok, Bombay, and who would have thought New York? So, I mean, which major metropolis will first face the real challenge of somehow really reinventing itself? And I think, you know, Miami is going to show us a lot about the future in how this community and these communities and our fractured municipal system, how they respond to it.
You're talking about climate change now?
Climate change. I did not major in arithmetic at either Harvard or Oxford, but one of the things I learned in my latest book is the difference between the square and the cube. And we tend to think in areas, but when the water goes up, like if it goes from 1 to 3, that really means you get a 9-fold increase in water pressure. And if you look at a map of the southeastern, by the way, in both my books, especially Finding Florida, but also in Miami City of the Future, which I will be signing on Thursday night on the 13th of March at Books and Books right here in Coral Gables, I go into, you have to understand the geography. And if you look at the southeastern United States, there's no great river flowing out of there. Unlike the rest of the country, that river is Florida. Florida is this calcified limestone, and the water percolates in, under, around, and on top of it. And Miami is right at the end. Now, as the salt water goes in, we're going to see a lot of changes. And I was up in North Florida. I had some wonderful times up there. And they don't use the glass-bottom boats anymore, or less and less, because the water is now unclear. And I want to say one thing that's very important is, when you take a population virtually the size of Australia and you put it on this rather small isthmus, you've already made most of your environmental concerns. We're going to have to learn how to live with climate change. It's going to cost billions of dollars.
Explain the term you used in the book, that Miami is paella and ballet.
Gosh, what a good writer I am. Well, it's I'd forgotten that one. Well, obviously it's paella because, let me speak metaphorically here, Mr. Joseph Cooper. I mean, it is paella in the sense that paella, while spicy, the elements within it retain their identity. You know, like they have little like garden store peas like mm-hmm. us, and then they have these exotic crayfish and things like other people all together. In more or less harmony. And one of the things I would disagree with Carl Heisen, my great friend whom I admire, to say nothing of Tom Wolfe, who I do not respect at all because of the cliched way he insults our people here. You know, the amazing thing, and I found it in the rest of Florida, is, you know, people get along very well. They get along much better than the cable network news make it seems.
Go on.
Oh, you want me to go on?
Well, I thought you were saying something.
Oh, no, I was. I thought that was a signal.
No, he was just giving me a time.
I'll give you an example. When I drive around northern Florida and I walk into the gas station and I say to the Indian guy who's selling gas there, Namaste, TK. And he says, why for do you speak Hindi? And I say, why do you speak English? Because we live in one world now. And it's all coming together. One of my favorite, again, this is in Finding Florida, but it applies magnificently to Miami, City of the Future. One of the great Florida historians and social philosophers was a guy named Zephaniah Kingsley. And he was here in 1829. And he was halfway between Thomas Jefferson and Marx. And he foresaw all the problems. He had a very nuanced class analysis and race. And he realized race hatred was going to destroy America and bring on horrors. This was a generation nearly before the Civil War. And you know what his solution was? He said we should all have sex together. Oh. And he said that the resulting people, when conditions were right, were superior in intelligence, grace, health, and form. And I say, you go down to Lincoln Road, or you walk in, you go to any shopping mall in Miami, you see these magnificent people, and you see Zephaniah Kingsley was right. So that gets back to the ballet, the grace of Miami. And, you know, it's terrific. I want to put in another word about Fort Lauderdale, because I'm going to be at the Fort Lauderdale Book Fest. Bonnie has the details. But I remember when I first looked at Fort Lauderdale, it was at this sort of dead end of the spring break inundation and nothing else. And it has transformed itself into a very interesting city. And you know what I call the Oolite megapolis, which are the cities from Palm Beach down to Homestead, built on this limestone slight elevation. This is now the seventh largest grand metropolitan area in the country. And, you know, I can't think of a place that has more vitality, that's more interesting, and I might add, produces less than any other major place.
We're speaking with T.D. Allman. He's an author, journalist. He was a longtime foreign war correspondent. And his latest book is Miami, City of the Future, which was from 1987, but reissued now and still relevant.
Relevant and selling like hot tamales, thank heavens, and flying out. And never forget Finding Florida, my other book, which, remember, I'm proud of this. It was a finalist for the National Book Award. Out of 8,000 books, it was among the top 10.
It was a great book. We had you on last spring.
We did, and I had a wonderful time with you.
Okay, it's Topical Currents. We're going to take a short break. We'll come back. We'll give out the phone number, and we'll give out the email address. Stay with us.
Yes, I think I feel all right. You come circling through the light. The skyline, baby, is bright tonight. What more perfect rendezvous? The sundown paints the shadows through. The daylight ain't weather would never leave. It just gets hard to believe that God sent this angel to watch over me. 'Cause my angel, she don't.
And we return. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and journalist and author T.D. Allman. We heard from the band Counting Crows in their song called Miami. You ever heard that before?
No, but I the last time I was on heard, I'd never heard of Grant Peebles. Now we're friends, so I think maybe now I'm going to have some
crow. Your horizons have expanded.
Do you know there are now more Hispanics in Kansas than when Miami City of the Future was first published? And as emigration will save us, it will always save us. It's the reason we're such a great country. That's the reason why somehow we transcend all our foolishnesses.
If you'd like to join in this conversation, we're speaking to T.D. Allman. The number is 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-9576. You can email radio@wlrn.org, and you can tweet us at topical currents. So one of the things you say, TD, is that Miami lacks a commitment to intellectual excellence at the societal level.
Yes, and I do not, I'm speaking in generic, broad historical terms. Obviously, there are some wonderfully intelligent people here.
At educational institutions.
At educational institutions. But I'm talking about, and this is really Florida as well as Miami, this state, this society is not paying to educate its children. Now, I want to add something here. When I also say that Miami and Florida are truth tellers, city and state. They show us what's going on in the rest of the country. And you don't know the people. I met a woman, in fact, at this festival that I mentioned with the McLean Music Festival, and she was a librarian. And I said, how is that? How is your work? Are she a public school librarian? She quit. She said, they cut my budget. And then they took away my assistant, and then they wanted me to do more. And when I was at FSU, I am probably the only person since the 16th century who both speaks fluent French and has written two books on Florida. So it wasn't really a big contest to be the keynote speaker there. But I think they just hired a football coach, and I paid him $21 million. I would not be so unkind as to criticize a university that paid me to go there. But I mean, you know, this is what's going on in our culture. And, you know, you have states like California, like Iowa, where they have this long tradition now of supporting education. Florida, it has been, and it still is, the opposite of that. I mean, Florida didn't have a medical school. Medical school was first proposed for Florida when Benjamin Harrison was president of the United States. It didn't graduate its first doctor from a state institution until John F. Kennedy had been elected. And there's this constant, and we see it in the Tallahassee. Now, I don't want to get into politics this morning, but I will say, well, let me say the Stand Your Ground law is a shame to Florida, and this shows our values. It allows grumpy white men like me to go on a murder spree. That's the simple truth. But let's get to education. Why are they always cutting education? I was on a program a few years ago called Talk of the Nation, a wonderful NPR program. Mm-hmm. I was in New York, and they were discussing Florida, and they were talking about education. And you know, all this thing, which basically come down to blame the student, blame the teachers, blah, 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 and all this stuff. I said, adding my historical perspective, I said that when Florida was admitted to the Union in 1845, it was last in spending per capita for education. Today, depending on how you count it, it's 48th, 49th. And I said to them, you know, this is an important thing. And I was in Orlando recently, the wonderful man there, Dylan Thomas, he works for the Orange County School Board. And he said, you know, this constant starvation, the refusal to adequately fund education in the state of Florida, it's forced them to be very resilient. And I said, what if you were in the middle? What if you were like 26th in per capita expenditure? And he said, oh, my heavens, the things we could do, the programs we could have. And what I'm saying here is a society that is always going on, refusing to educate its children, refusing to put the money there, is hurting itself. And you can't turn this around in a day. But I will say right now, where Florida and especially is interesting and informative and in some ways dismaying is that these attitudes are no longer far from limited to Florida. Florida in these areas has become a trendsetter. And, you know, I don't know, you know, we have to educate our children.
We have a tweet. I don't know his name. It says, when will South Florida finally educate its talent instead of importing it, ignoring locals?
The answer to that question is, I don't know, but if past is prologue, don't hold your breath. And one of the things, now, if you go way back to the Calusa, to the Indians who lived around here, the Spanish were befuddled because the people looked rich, but they had the oysters from the sea and things like that, so they had a standard of living that in other areas would be associated with a more advanced degree of civilization and productivity. And one of the things I found out, which I first noticed in Miami and later saw in the whole of Florida, this is a place where people from Ponce de Leon to Rick Scott, come to dispense money they made elsewhere.
To expend.
To expend the money that they made elsewhere. And it's a very hard place to produce things. Flagler, by the way, why don't we, the downtown is Flagler and Miami Avenue. Why don't we call it Flagler, and who was the lady who founded Miami?
Tuttle.
Why don't we change that to Tuttle?
Or Mary Brickell.
Well, yeah, I thought you meant Brickell.
Yeah, so anyway, you know, one of the things that's come up is right here in Miami, in Tallahassee, I met with some officials, and they said, what do you want to do, change the names on everything? I said, no, keep your Confederate nonsense. But
most people would say that Henry Flagler had the biggest imprint on modern Florida of any individual.
Well, that's not true. He was a total failure. You look at his bridge to nowhere. His railroad never made money. His hotels never made money. It was a great vanity project. You know, in England and the North, when people got rich, they had fake buildings built on their estate.
What about Carl Fisher?
Fisher, well, they're all fascinating. And what ends in the end, they all go broke. Florida ruins everybody. It started with Ponce de Leon. Let me get to the basic thing with the Spanish. Florida is the only state with no metals of any kind. No tin, no lead, no gold. And yet they were killing people. Give us the gold. Where's the gold? Where's the gold? And this continues to the present. Anybody who comes here who thinks they're going to make money in Florida, better go back to someplace else and make money there, and then you come down here and you enjoy it. Flagler told the truth. He said, I would have been a rich man if it weren't for Florida. Now, what changed Florida? You know, we have this myth that big government is the problem. We need big government to protect us. We need it to protect our central government. The Florida legislature never would have reapportioned itself if it weren't for the federal courts and so on. And so, you know, what really changed Florida first was the United States government. The United States never purchased Florida. It bludgeoned Spain into giving it up. And then the local white folk, the oligarchs, homesteading was banned in Florida. And then the oligarchs could never beat the Seminoles. And so the U.S. Army had to come in. And what revolutionized Florida was no income tax for the oligarchs, so they could dispense their money down here. Then the interstate highway systems and the Social Security system. And so I tell our folks in the rest of the Florida, you're going to be much more like Miami in the future, and you better get ready to enjoy it. I went to the Villages, and oh, that was fun. And
I've been there.
And the Villages is this self-inflicted concentration camp for people who are afraid of reality. And they live around in this place. And I said, oh, I want to go there. Got to go there. And they said, well, they won't like you. And I was hoping it was going to be like the scene out of Frankenstein, where they, you know, they have the torches. And I had a wonderful audience. And one woman stood up and said, well, he says unkind things about the village. We read it, and they all applauded. I said, is this true or not true? They said, of course it's true.
T.D. Allman, when we come back, I'd like to go back a little bit to when you wrote the book, and we'll talk about the wild Miami of the 1980s.
Okay.
We'll do that. T.D. Allman is the author of Miami City of the Future, and he has some events going on we'll be telling you about. And we're going to take a short break and be right back.
What do you got here?
That was delivered by a messenger this morning.
What's this about?
He's here.
Jeans.
Oh. I remember that.
The Mutiny.
I've got that in the book.
Right.
The Pastels. We produced a concert series with Philip Michael Thomas. So, T.D. Allman, tell us more about the height of the cocaine era and when Miami took on this European chic.
Well, I mean, I have to say that in the book I describe the, which is still in there, is the one and only time I ever took cocaine in my life. Totally, I smoked marijuana once in Nepal, and I choked uncontrollably for 40 minutes. I will not describe the consequences of the time I smoked opium in Phnom Penh with the Israeli ambassador. That's for another program. But you're all such great pals, and aren't we having a good time? And then they gradually fade away, and one guy says, oh, I got to go to Caracas this morning, and I'm sitting in this house somewhere in Coconut Grove, and the maid is coming in vacuuming, and I think, where am I? And I say, well, I better go home, back to the hotel where I was staying, and I get out, and I'm thinking, it must be snowing, but I'm sweating. It's very hot, and the snow is this cocaine that's blowing all around. And I just said, oh boy, I'm never going to do that again. And I mean, in those days, I just found it. See, that wasn't the stuff that fascinated me. What fascinated me was the stuff that was really going on, who the Marielitos were, so even the criminals were.
The bodies in trunks at the airport.
Well, that was part of, but I mean, I became, one of the things that is very curious is I spend a certain amount of time giving the press, the academics, and so on, their due, which is like a thorn or a lump of coal. But, you know, people need to know. So what happens, let's take the Iraq War, when the press totally abandons its responsibilities to tell the truth. Well, we have the late night comics, the jesters. That was the role always at the courts. They're the ones who tell us what's going on. And there's this interesting thing in one of my many earlier reincarnations as a contributing editor for Harper's in the late 70s. I said, you know, the urban crisis is a myth. Cities are changing. And I mentioned gentrification and all this stuff. And it is this curious thing, and again, as I mentioned in both my books, but especially in Miami, that Hollywood and TV shows and the popular culture often gets it better, much better. And this was the case not only with Miami Vice, but with Escape from New York and, you know, all these other wonderful films. And I met, I went out and spent some time on the set, if I remember correctly, of Miami Vice was in North Miami Beach, which, of course, mm-hmm. is nowhere near a beach, which makes it so typically thing. And they were very nice, and I met the two second leads who were, by that time, all they did was complain that their parts kept getting completely written out, and Don Johnson was Don Johnson, and the other guy was the other guy. I wound up spending a lot of time with Eddie Almas because he was the only intelligent guy on the set, and he was so interesting to talk to. So when I look back on that, I sort of remember those sort of things. Though I have to say, you mentioned the mutiny. One time I came out of the mutiny, some people had almost drawn their guns when a Chinese friend of mine asked one of their ladies to dance. But that was smoothed over. We took care of that. And then we went out, and I was walking around. I'm not sure it was the same night. And I went around a corner, and a car blew up. A car bomb went off. But I have to say, even then, the things that hold people together were stronger. And again, I want to go into the basic. I mentioned the idiocy, the injustice, the horribleness of the Stand Your Ground law. And I want to say something. If you want to understand America, Miami, or yourself. Every month is Black History Month here. If you don't understand the ethnic cleansing of the Indians and the other people and what has been done to black people in this country, and you think it's this little Dick and Jane country, you're fooling yourselves, okay?
You talk about the injustice in the Florida legal system, but this is something you see as nationwide.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to let Florida off the hook. Florida's worse. Florida's worse than most of them. And remember, it goes all the way back from the beginning. The problem with Florida, one of the problems of Florida, the basic problem of Florida is that there's no reason for 20 million people to be here. Let's pull that right out on the table. The resources aren't here. We have gone through a series of things. And back during the Seminole Wars, an American soldier wrote home that he would rather spend 6 months in hell than 1 month in Florida. And then after the Civil War, then starting with the oligarchs up to the present, and mass prosperity, Social Security, internet highways, you have the birth of
air conditioning.
Air conditioning. You have this idea that Florida's paradise, which it ain't. We all know that. It gets cold here. Cold killed the astronauts. Two of the 10 great catastrophes of the 20th century were cold. We also have the hurricanes. Lots of things don't belong here, including us in such enormous numbers. But you had this thing where if you live up north, you reach a certain age, you're supposed to sell your house, divorce yourself from the surroundings, all the circumstances that gave your life meaning, and you're supposed to come down here. Well, you know, this isn't going to keep on going on, because, in part, because people don't vote their class and economic interests. So what's happening is many of the people who live in places like the Villages, and I said I had a terrific time in the Villages, if somebody's there, have me back. But, you know, they're not benefiting from these candidates they support. The candidates they support are facilitating one of the most enormous transfers of wealth in American history. 2001. I'm going to say something right now to get some calls. I think Snowden is a hero. I've been a journalist for 45 years, and I admire that man. And you'll get a few calls about this, but has to reveal our stuff. Okay.
You talk so much about telling it like it is. You pride yourself so much on telling the truth, mm-hmm. be it about Miami, Florida, mm-hmm. Indochina, the Middle East. So what do you think? So you think we're suffering from this dearth of honest reporting?
Yes, and I don't, you know, you're dealing, like we talked about education earlier. We're talking about great secular trends here. Let's talk about the Miami Herald, since I just heroized Snowden. That'll get tongues wagging. It is a great newspaper, but I wonder, is the Herald ever going to win a Pulitzer Prize again? It was downtown, and I mean, I'm appalled at this story, how they say newspapers don't make money. And yet the land upon which the newspaper sits sells for what? I know, you know the price, but hundreds of millions of dollars. And I've been out to visit the nice folks at the Herald and many other newspapers out in what they call Doral and I call the ex-Everglades. And I go around Florida and I go around America and you walk into these, you always know you're on track when you've got the guys in the engineering room laughing and agreeing with you and doing their thumbs. So I'm glad I mentioned Mr. Snowden. I should be pardoned, okay? Now, so I look at these and you go and I was in the Lakeland Ledger. That what they have is they have three young harassed white women who do the work that nine guys used to do. They have one fat old guy reporter like me. And then they have some black women. Now, again, excuse me, this is what I saw with my own eyes, and they do the administration.
Where was this, the Ledger?
Lakeland Ledger. But, I mean, it's a thing I've seen in Tallahassee, mm-hmm. and it's like visiting the Roman Colosseum after the fall of Rome. And America's newspapers are being destroyed. You know, the secular waves buffeting journalism and print in America are horrendous enough in their own. But they're being destroyed by their owners. They're being destroyed by people who don't love newspapers. That's what's happening to the press. But, you know, the truth will out, and people will find ways. And as I said, when we create a situation in which the press is not doing its job, and I say this with the greatest respect to my friends at the Miami Herald, they are heroes day after day, month after month. They struggle with declining budgets. You know, I was here, I didn't keep up for a few years, and in my endless quest, which Florida's taught me for self-promotion, I said, well, why don't you do a story in Tropic? I said, oh, we closed Tropic down years ago.
Oh, right.
So you're asking people to pay more and more for less and less, and it's not a recipe for success.
You're hearing the voice of T.D. Allman. I just want to say a few things. T.D. Allman will be at Books and Books this Thursday. It's March 13th. That's Books and Books in Coral Gables on Aragon Avenue, and that's at 6:30 p.m. Then on Sunday the 16th, he'll be at the Fort Lauderdale Book Festival for an appearance. Part of that will be an appearance at 2 p.m. at the Davie campus at Nova Southeastern University.
That's on Sunday, yes.
That's on Sunday the 16th.
It actually starts at 11. It goes the whole day. So bring the kids out and have a great time.
Okay, and that festival is...
It's called the Fort Lauderdale Book Festival, and it's actually helps raise money. You know, we talked about not supporting education. If you want to support education, go to this Fort Lauderdale Book Festival, buy books, support people. The profits go for a foundation that supports libraries in Broward.
What are your views on e-books?
I think my books are so beautiful, and I'm so fortunate that they have all been produced in such a wonderful way. That I think I like to see them held and caressed and loved by owners. But I'm told about 30% of the sales of Finding Florida, which has done extremely well in both hardcover, are digital. And I said, what should I do? about this. They said, just keep on doing what you're doing. And I guess I just did that, didn't I?
You're doing it. Natalie has an email. She said she just moved here from Texas 4 months ago. Refreshing to hear your guest acknowledge how unproductive, accepting of mediocrity at all levels, i.e. education, work ethic, and corrupt South Florida is.
Well, why do we limit it to South Florida?
Even I don't think Texas has too much to talk about either.
I want to say something about Texas. Now, I mean, I don't have a lot to say about Texas because I don't talk about things I haven't researched. But, you know, Texas has a smaller proportion of its population, I think unconstitutionally disfranchised, than Florida. I mean, again, we're talking about how can you have a growing society when some black kid gets into trouble and he's a felon for the rest of your life. Some young white kid, you know what happened? Because I grew up as a privileged white kid. You know, I came out of the ghettos of Harvard, okay? I grew up on the main line of Philadelphia. And, you know, if I did half the stuff that these kids did, you know what would happen? Or twice, I'm sorry, twice. Oh, they'd say I'd have some sort of condition, or I needed a foreign trip, or I needed counseling.
So you're talking about racial
divide. Yeah, I mean,
racial
as
divide.
Long as we're going to do this, going to have this. But again, let me say something. Why do these old racial stereotypes, why have they eroded so much? In France, I was giving a conference last summer, and they said, was I surprised that Trayvon Martin was killed? I said, no. It's been okay to kill black boys in Florida forever, and it's going to be. But I said, what I could not have predicted was that this state would give its electoral votes to a black man twice in a row. So, I mean, you have this stuff going on that's very interesting.
We're speaking with T.D. Allman. He's an author and journalist, and his latest book is Miami City of the Future. Actually, his book before this, which is also his latest book, is Finding Florida, the True History of the Sunshine State, but we're talking about Miami City of the Future.
You know, earlier when I said immigration will save us, why are these things breaking down? Because the Latino Hispanic cultures are not as race obsessed as we are. And one of the things I started to say this earlier up in Tallahassee, I said, we don't need to take down any of the monuments, but if a guy was a killer and a racist and he turned little orphans out as a guy named Yu Lee did, and they wanted to build a monument, I said, go ahead, sir, but I would prefer you built a monument to the brave black soldiers from your area, Fernandina, who did this. And I feel down here. All right, I have another proposal.
Okay, wait, hold
we
that
going
proposal.
To a break.
We're going to go to our break.
Then the teaser is out. You'll find
yes,
out what's
next. Yes, the proposal
next.
From T.D. Allman when we come back on Topical Currents.
And we return 48 minutes past 1 o'clock. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and T.D. Allman. Tell me, T.D., in your book, I can't quite understand this, but you say that going to Publix is a good way to get a pulse on Miami.
Yes, because, I mean, you go, first of all, let's talk about some of the positive things. Now, I'm not saying Publix is wonderful, but it is the largest employee-owned corporation in the United States, as I understand. And I like the idea of that, but you go to Publix, you have the whole of Florida there. And I always, you know, if it's a Haitian woman, I say, merci un peu, and I practice my Spanish, and they say, oh, isn't that cute? And then you have the Germans, and I, you know, and so on. But even more, when you go out to put your stuff in your car, you have what we call people, special people, and they've found a place for them to unload it. And the other place I recommend in Miami, and in both my books, I think, is if you really want to see Florida, go to the driver, go to your driver license bureau.
Oh, yes.
And you see frightened parents speaking in every language from Malayalam to I don't know what. And, you know, realizing their kids are totally Americanized after such a short period of time, and they're getting this weapon in their hands. But I said earlier before this about the genius of immigration in America. And the reason, if it weren't for immigration, we'd still be this country even more horribly obsessed with race and deformed by race. But what is especially wonderful about our Hispanic brothers and sisters who are living here now is that they don't, you know, they aren't as racist as we are. And I started to say, by racist, I don't mean you hate somebody. I mean your whole worldview is sort of infused by this. And I said this, I've said this several times. I said it in Tampa the other day to a white audience. And I said, you know, I grew up in America. If I see three black kids walking down the street with a boombox, I'm going to feel stressed. I might even feel scared. But that doesn't give me the right to pull out a gun and kill them. And that's what America is about. Now, I want to, the real heroes of Florida history, I want to get
right. What about your proposal?
Yes, here's my proposal. This account, Soho, south of Fifth, SoFi. Back there, you know, one of the myths is that all this stuff is in North Florida. In 1962, I believe it was, a black Honduran seaman, English-speaking, was living with a white waitress from Alabama. The landlady, who was of apparently Eastern European origin, nothing stereotypical in this situation, spied on Dewey McLaughlin while he was taking a shower and called the police. And as the police later reported, he had certain figures which were anatomically identified him as a colored male. These people were taken in, and by a Dade County, Miami Beach jury, they were convicted of cohabitation. The case went all the way to the Supreme Court. And it came 2 years before Love versus Virginia. Now, what this is, now people like marriage equality people are seeing this as the first beginnings of protection for unconventional forms of relationships. Now, my proposal is very simple. We've got all these things around for ex-slavers and stuff. Let's put up one of those beautiful blue plaques down there on the street where they lived, honoring these two people who helped to pioneer. And you look around, you see, the truth is, racism is being defeated. The black and white idea of America is being defeated. And it's being defeated because we are both the most intelligent and highly sexed species on the planet, and we can now go everywhere we want and do everything we want. And so if we put that plaque there, and I will help identify the place, you will see people of all sexual persuasions walking past there having a good time. You'll see people speaking Portuguese, Ukrainian. And I think it would be a wonderful thing if we started honoring the true heroes of Florida history and of Miami. And let's do that, and let's change the intersection to Tuttle and Flagler.
Or Brickell. Flagler. Richard writes an email, his name from Davey, and he says his mother's a public elementary school art teacher, and for the past few years, the only way she could keep her job was she learned how to write grants. If she weren't able to get her own grants for the art program, the school would have been forced not to have an art program. Mm. He says, for the subject of race in Florida and Stand Your Ground, I'm a 25-year-old white male married to a black woman. Because of the way the institutionalized racism, especially in Florida, I'm actually afraid to have any children because my children will have to go through so much hardship just because of the color of their skin.
All right. What I want to interject here. Be brave and have children. And I'll tell you why. Did I mention Zephaniah Kingsley earlier, the philosopher?
Yes.
And he said to do this, to produce offspring, was a noble enterprise. He said it was one which should be lauded. And so I urge you to do whatever you think is appropriate under the circumstances. But I have to say, you know, it's a lot easier for me, but I can get on the radio and say whatever I want. And I'm not holding myself up as an example. I'm not even going to go there. But I think if you find love and you want it to flow to its natural conclusion, remember, you will have a lot of brave, unknown until now, except for my book, Finding Florida. And if you read that book, you'll go in and you'll find heroes and who are in situations like you. And at every stage, they try and airbrush what you're out. And by the way, I'm going to be in Davie, aren't I? Isn't that place?
You are. You want me to go through?
Well, I don't know. It's just mention that place.
Briefly.
Since he's in
okay.
Davie.
Okay. T.D. Allman, Finding Florida, Miami, City of the Future. He'll be at Books and Books this Thursday evening, 6:30 p.m., Books and Books in Coral Gables. On Sunday, he'll be at 2 o'clock at the Davie campus, Nova Southeastern University, as part of the Fort Lauderdale Book Festival.
And then we can just go on to Palm Beach.
Okay. In Palm Beach, Thursday, 27th of March, Palm Beach State College, the Essay, E-I-S-S-E-Y campus. It's in Palm Beach Gardens at 6:30 p.m. And then the studios at Key West, Monday, April 7th.
And
6:30 p.m.
As long as I'm in Florida and I haven't started my next book, invite me anywhere. And if you're honest, good people, I'll show up and tell you what I think.
Well, let's see. We have an emailer. Al says about Snowden, a hero. He doesn't think he's a hero.
Well, I can see where there would be different judgments on this. But I think, frankly, I doubt President Obama knew what was going on. And look at Senator Feinstein, this fine woman from California. She's been defending these people all along, and they've been spying on her. And I'm saying we have, the truth will out now. I put this thing in the sense that if our institutions are not doing what they should do, then other people step in.
Well, we certainly want to thank you. It's been a very
interesting
hour
with T.D. Allman
on Topical Currents. We've been visiting with journalist, correspondent, and author T.D. Allman, and his latest book is a reissue of Miami City of the Future with a new opening and a new close. Always good to see you, T.D. Thank you.
Thank
you. Wonderful. Keep up the good work.
Thank you for coming.
And that wraps up today's edition. Apologies to callers we couldn't get to. Our producer is Richard Ive, technical supervision by online producer Paul Leary. We have free audio archives and downloads at our website, that's WLRN.org. More information as well, including author and book links, at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Drop us a like. Tomorrow at 1, it's live coverage of the Miami-Dade School Board meeting. We return Thursday with Linda Gassenheimer's annual St. Patrick's Day celebration with restaurateur Martin Lynch of the renowned John Martin's. And to the calendar, on this day in 1990, 24 years ago, a stunning boxing upset. Undefeated heavyweight champ Mike Tyson is knocked out in the 10th round in Tokyo by Buster Douglas, who had been a 42-1 underdog. Douglas lost the title to Evander Holyfield. And on this day in 1993, 21 years ago, President Bill Clinton announces his choice of Miami prosecutor Janet Reno to be the nation's first female attorney general. Her father, Henry Reno, was a longtime Miami Herald police reporter. One more while we recall the Troopergate business. On this day, 1994, 20 years ago, former Arkansas state clerical worker Paula Jones accuses then-Governor Bill Clinton of making improper sexual advances to her in a Little Rock hotel room. The president denied it later and settled out of court. So we leave with a thought from Bill Clinton, who of course survived impeachment. Quote, being president is like running a cemetery. You've got a lot of people under you, and nobody's listening. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, Topical Currents, thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Here and Now next from NPR News.